The ink was hardly dry on the first pages to be run off by the Gutenberg printing press in 1450 when the censors moved in. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Censorship is hardly new. Dr. Ann Alter is special guest curator for a major exhibit on censorship at the New York Public Library.
Censorship has been around as long as someone has tried to say something that someone else didn't like. Plato talks about how parts of the Odyssey should have been censored for children because it was inappropriate. What makes censorship particularly important is the development of the printing press. That with the printing press, you begin to get a proliferation of books and pamphlet literature which attacked authority in ways that authority found totally unacceptable.
There are some 300 items in the exhibit: books, manuscripts, documents, prints, pamphlets, broadsides, and a printing press.
We've made an attempt in the exhibit to define censorship as meaning any type of constraint, so that Victorianism would be considered a form of censorship. For instance, Thackeray rejected a poem by Elizabeth Barrett Browning because it talked about an illicit passion between a man and a woman. This was unacceptable in the 19th century.
Dr. William Joyce is assistant director of rare books and manuscripts at the library.
The exhibition attempts to develop a series of themes that were particularly pertinent to a given point in time over the 500-year course that the exhibition covers.
Joyce's specialty is censorship in America.
The selections for the show start as early as 1649 with a London imprint that was burned in Boston because it offended the magistrates of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and that it extends down through the Revolutionary crisis and includes such things as the Declaration of Independence.
In which the Continental Congress deleted a statement prohibiting slavery. A further look at the hand of the censor in my next report. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. In Ray Bradbury's novel, Fahrenheit 451, firemen were called to start fires, not put them out, and the objects torched were books. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Brush fires of censorship are still burning around the world, and why censorship happens is often baffling. Evan Hunter, known for his novel The Blackboard Jungle, to this day doesn't know why one library removed his novel Chisholm from the shelves.
Clean as a whistle. I couldn't understand why they had censored it. And my first reaction was just that, you know, my God, what are they going to censor next, Mary Poppins? But that was a wrong reaction. The reaction should have been they shouldn't censor anything.
That's a belief shared by novelist Kurt Vonnegut on an earlier broadcast.
There was a time when we all censored ourselves, because there seemed reason to suspect that sexual scenes, dirty language, might actually upset children.
Conservatives are widely blamed for censorship efforts, but Cal Thomas of the Moral Majority, interviewed last year, says it's a bum rap.
The occasional conservative who goes in and tries to take a book off a shelf or prevent other people from reading it is rare and has been blown out of proportion. The real censorship is coming from the left wing in this country, who manipulate the content of our textbooks, who put the few books that they allow in the secular bookstores in the back shelf in the back of the store, and who generally keep our stuff off of the bestseller lists and out of libraries.
Censorship is an emotional issue in America, which prides itself on the First Amendment to a remarkable document known as the U.S. Constitution. Lest we forget, it reads like this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. More on censorship in my next report. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Civil libertarians believe that the censorship of the pornographic can open the gates to censorship of the political. Thus, the issue of obscenity is an emotional one. Dr. William Joyce, assistant director of rare books and manuscripts at the New York Public Library, is one of the people responsible for an exhibit called Censorship, 500 Years of Conflict. Joyce says censorship aimed at morality caught on in 19th century America.
In Elizabeth Barrett Browning poetry, books having to do with birth control, novels as seemingly innocuous as Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn or Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter, Walt Whitman, who lost a job in the Interior Department because the secretary at the time thought that it was obscene.
Most of America's obscenity laws were rendered moot in the 1960s thanks to one man, Barney Rossett, the publisher of Grove Press. Rossett went to battle on behalf of a book called Lady Chatterley's Lover by D.H. Lawrence.
Lady Chatterley's Lover is a very, very good book that had never been published in this country legally. I chose that book on a very cold basis as a way to challenge censorship in this country, and prepared for it very carefully, tried to pick the right lawsuit, which in this case was with the federal government as opposed to a local one. It was a long, bitter fight, but we won it.
Dr. Ann Alter is guest curator at the New York Public Library.
America is really one of the few countries that doesn't have any kind of written law, and which in a sense relies on community standards to decide what is censorable and what isn't. England, France, Italy, all over Western Europe, there are laws which say what is and isn't acceptable in terms of the community, whether newspapers can say certain things.
Indeed, in some nations, newspapers are licensed, and Alter notes that the latest censorship thrusts are aimed at telecommunications, notably cable television. More about censorship in my next report. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. A Judy Blume novel has been restricted by a New Jersey school board because the book contains words considered to be objectionable. At the end of this broadcast, we will hear those words. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. Judy Blume's novel, Blubber, is off the school library shelves in Lindenwall, New Jersey, near Philadelphia. It's the story of an overweight child. Sixth graders may read it, but only if they request it. Restrictions have also been placed on another Judy Blume book, It's Not the End of the World, and Alexandra the Great by Constance Greene. Edward Zerpoli is the Lindenwald School Superintendent.
I don't think what the Board of Education did was in any way inappropriate. I thought it was a fair appraisal of a problem. It was a preventive approach to provide appropriate reading material to age-appropriate children.
Judy Blume's sensitive books for young people have met a similar fate in other school libraries. In an earlier interview, Blume said that there was little controversy over her books at first.
It wasn't anything until the kids found the books, and it's the kids who made it happen, I guess through word of mouth. There were no ads saying, read this book. They found them, and they found something in them, comfort, identity, that made them feel better about themselves.
Blume says the people who ban her books are those afraid to let their children know the truth.
They think somehow that if their kids don't read about these things, their kids won't think about these things. Sexuality, death, money, again, real life.
Now, let's hear the words in Judy Blume's novel, Blubber, found objectionable in Lindenwald, New Jersey. Here's School Superintendent Zerpoli.
On page 30, the word bitch. Page 69, the word damn. Page 121, damn it. Page 42, rotten eggs in the mailbox, using someone's backyard for a toilet, which is an expression.
A major exhibition on censorship in New York renews attention to a dilemma still unresolved. More about censorship in my next report. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. A major censorship battle is being fought in Indianapolis, Indiana. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain. After a similar ordinance was vetoed in Minneapolis, Mayor William Hudnut of Indianapolis signed a bill that equates pornography with discrimination against women.
It includes a finding that pornography, which is defined as the sexually explicit subordination of women graphically and violently depicted in pictures or in words, pornography is a form of sex discrimination because its effect is to deny women equal opportunity in society.
It may take the U.S. Supreme Court to resolve the issue. The Indiana Civil Liberties Union is leading the opposition. Its director is Michael Gradison.
The people who are concerned about it are the plaintiffs we have who filed suit in federal court here in Indianapolis, plaintiffs like the American Booksellers Association, which represents 5,200 bookshops across the country.
Gradison says the Indianapolis pornography bill is another assault on the First Amendment and is ill-conceived, poorly drafted, overly broad, and constitutionally vague.
It will allow some of the right-wing fundamentalist evangelicals to organize cadres of people, as they've already threatened to do here in Indianapolis, to attack conventional bookstores, not just the so-called adult bookstores, the adult motion picture theaters.
Mayor William Hudnut admits to some doubts about the law.
We have to define a pornography narrowly and explicitly, including violence, as well as the explicit nature of the graphic or word picture that is drawn. What I'm saying is that we've got to be careful we don't just broad brush this.
The mayor of Indianapolis, whose signature is on a bill to permit women to sue if they feel words or pictures are discriminatory. Censorship efforts are likely to be around for a long time, often with the best of intentions, for there are those who believe that the right of free speech is not unlimited. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim.